I'm Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal, ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com.
Hey, it's Wolfman Mac from Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema. We're hanging out at the Haunted Winery here in Warren, Michigan with the good folks from Ghostly Talk. Ooh, this place is creepy, man, but nowhere near as creepy as Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema. It's a haunted drive-in, babies, and you know what we do there? We host classic B-horror and sci-fi movies, just like the ones you grew up with when you was a kid. And it's at Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema right now, hosting on public access TV all over Metro Detroit. But guess what, kiddies? It's coming to you, and all you gotta do is have a computer. Just go to Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's nightmarecinema.com. We'll be broadcasting the show real soon, right from the website. Stay tuned. It's Wolfman Mac, Nightmare Cinema. Bye!
The number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
I say, Sean B., I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed! What a shame we don't have any of those traits! Oh yeah, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive-time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostandhuman.com.
Think you know what goes bump in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostandhuman.com. The Ghost Planet Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
Since 1967, that would be 41 years ago, I know this because I just turned 41, Stanton T. Friedman has lectured on the topic, flying saucers are real, at more than 600 colleges and over 100 professional groups in 50 states, 9 provinces, and 16 other countries. He's published more than 80 UFO papers and appeared on hundreds of radio and TV programs, including Ghostly Talk.
Years ago.
Yes, many years ago, and yeah. It's so good to have him back. He is the original civilian investigator of the Roswell incident and co-authored Crash at Corona, the definitive study of the Roswell incident. Top Secret Magic, his explosive book about the Majestic 12 group that established in 1947 to deal with crash saucers was published in 1966 and went through 1996 and went through 6 printings. I had read ahead to that 6 and I just added it, you know, and there you go.
Yep.
The second edition with a new 5,000 word afterword was published in September 2005, and is in its second printing. Stan was presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award at Leeds, England in September 2002 by UFO Magazine of the UK. A documentary, Stanton T. Friedman Is Real, was broadcast in Canada in 2002. The website is www.stantonfriedman.com, and Ghostly Talk would love to welcome back Stanton Friedman to the show. Welcome back.
Glad to be here again.
I'm wondering how cool it must be to be that cool that they actually do a special on you.
Well, I'll tell you, the producer of it was my nephew, Paul Kimball, and that was his first UFO-related television program.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to pick something he could find out a lot about easily, something interesting, something exciting, so he picked me.
And I agree.
Well, I agree.
You are interesting and exciting. And I've been dying to talk to you because just a little bit ago, a friend of mine and I decided...
Oh, I'm going to just pull my mic out now. It's all you, Doug.
That we are going over the 4th of July weekend to Roswell, New Mexico for the annual Alien Festival. To me, it looks like it could be Mardi Gras for geeks, and I am ultra, ultra excited about it. Stanton, have you been, you've been around to all the, you know, the conventions, everything like that. This Alien Festival in Roswell, New Mexico over the 4th of July weekend, is it everything that I'm thinking of?
Well, it depends. There are actually going to be 2 festivals, if you want to call them that. Two major events for visitors to Roswell. One is the museum will be having a number of us speaking on one of those. And then downtown, a little competitive action here in town. The city is putting on a a festival, and they got a bunch of speakers at the community facility.
Uh-huh.
And there'll be all kinds of things going on in town, and the media there. I was there, of course, for the 60th anniversary last year, and signed an awful lot of books. And I was there for the 50th and a whole bunch in between. I don't get a cut of the action on this, you understand. Without me, there would be no Roswell Festival.
Pretty much.
I agree.
Well, I have to say, I have to go to whatever one of the things you are at, because I absolutely can't wait. I'll probably be sort of blended in.
Wear your ghostly talk T-shirt.
Well, that's the thing. In the UFO community, I'm fairly not known.
Yeah, but if you wear a ghostly talk T-shirt, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb.
How about a Stan Friedman is real T-shirt?
There you go.
Make that up.
Hey, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I may even have some copies of the video there just to make it exciting for people who want to go with that sort of thing.
I think that would be awesome.
Why don't you get one of those shirts made up, and then you'll stick out really good. And then you can hook up with Stanton.
I think that would be cool.
Hot pink.
A hot pink Stanton Stanton Friedman is real T-shirt.
Hot pink with a green hat.
Well, I can guarantee you one thing. It'll be hot in Roswell in the summertime. It gets warm down there. Very dry, but hot.
And
the sun beats down on you, and better wear some... sunburn preventer, because you can get cooked in a hurry.
That would be awesome. I hope I come back looking,
pink.
Yeah, pink. Not pink.
The same color as that shirt you're going to wear.
I want to look brown. I want to look dark, deep brown. But, you know, the thing is, if I do wear this outfit that you guys are talking about and Stanton sees me in the crowd, he is going to indeed call security.
Yeah. The guy was for real. I can't believe
this guy did what he said he was going to do on that show. Get rid of him. And,
well, you know, I should mention, in case people are wondering, Roswell is at about 3,500 feet altitude.
Uh-huh.
So you burn quicker
at
higher altitude.
Yes,
the UV
do.
Gets through better. And I learned my lesson a number of years ago.
Well, I apparently fake bake. That's a new term to me. I never heard it before.
You never heard of fake and bake?
I've never
he's
heard
never
of fake
heard
bake.
It.
But I evidently I do.
Heard that in junior high.
I do go to tanning salons and stuff, so my skin will not be pristine when I arrive. It will be already darkened, so I'm hoping that will help protect me somewhat. But yes, indeed, I will wear protection from that nasty sun that you can't control. Yes.
So you're going to be out at this event, though, Stanton, obviously, and probably on the watch out for Doug now.
Yes, he's going to be running from me most of the time. Yes.
Well, I do a lot of meeting and greeting in Roswell. An awful lot of people, you know, everybody's got a digital camera these days.
Oh, yes.
And they come in, they want to buy the book, they want me to sign the book, okay, and then they want their picture taken with me. So I don't know whether they think that if they buy the book, I'll be kind enough to pose, and they don't need to buy the book, but, you know, I don't complain about that. But what I'm saying is I find that because of all these television programs that I've done, people recognize me. And so that makes me, quote, a TV celebrity, it says here. And I get all these people tell me, oh, I saw you on, I watched everything you've done. And, you know, I don't know how they know that, of course, but they don't often get a chance to be close to somebody who's been on Larry King.
That's true.
You were on Larry King, weren't you?
I was on July 13th, and I was on January 18th. So
That's just this year you were on. Yeah, January 18th.
Yeah, and
this
I was
year.
Also on way back in 1994 out near Area 51.
Ooh.
Oh.
I don't know if any of you remember that show. That was one of the weirdest places I've ever done a show. You're out in the middle of nowhere, just outside Rachel, Nevada, across from the Little Ailey Inn.
Yes.
You know, Area 51's over that hill over there, and we're on this big set out in the open, and it got cooler, and Larry buttoned up his coat, and we're waiting for the saucer to come up over the hills. That was a two-hour TNT show, actually.
Uh-huh.
And, it illustrated one of the problems you have in this business. I asked early in the afternoon one of the producers, wasn't the one I'd been dealing with, I said, are you going to take calls out here? I mean, we're literally in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And she says, oh, yeah, the calls have come into Atlanta, and they'll go to that truck that nobody will see that's way over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll screen them very carefully because, of course, most people don't believe in UFOs. At which I said, what? the polls all say most people do believe in UFOs, and the greater the education, the more likely to believe in UFOs. And I quoted some numbers and stuff, but the damage was already done because they had about 10 clips of different, quote, experts. I mean, there was, would you believe, Captain Kirk.
Ooh.
Telling us that, there aren't any flying saucers. People just want Big Brother to come down and help them, you know, like he was an astronaut or something.
William Shatner was there. You're talking about William Shatner.
Well, there was a
they
clip
used
of
the
him.
Clip
oh,
of
Captain,
William Shatner.
The clip. Okay, yeah. All right, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and they used a clip of Carl Sagan, and they used about 10 clips altogether. It's a two-hour show. And the kicker was that most of them were negative because of their totally wrong perception that most people don't believe in UFOs.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why one of the chapters in my new book, Flying Saucers and Science, which should be out in late May, deals with the polls, because people say, hey, wait a minute, you said flying saucers and science. What are you talking about opinion polls for? That's not science, is it? Well, yes, it is, because, A, how you take the polls, you've got to be careful, you know, how representative your sample is and how you ask the questions and all that stuff, but much more important, it turns out that how people behave is determined by their perception of how other people believe and think. They may be wrong, but it determines their actions. And as an example of that, I was in a class of 100 students. I often do classes on campus. And I said, I want to find out what you think about some things, but I don't want you to be influenced by the other students in the class. So I want you to answer my question with your eyes closed. And most of them did close their eyes. I said, your instructor and I will count the votes. And it turns out, make a long story short, 80% thought most people didn't believe in UFOs, and yet 80% of that group did believe in UFOs.
Oh.
So there's a disconnect here. In other words, will you report a sighting? Well, not if you think most people are going to laugh at you. Mm-hmm. Will you sponsor a PhD thesis? There have only been about a dozen. Will you teach a course?
Mm-hmm.
There have been some, but again, the perception that you will be considered some kind of a nut is dominant. I ask my audiences at the end of my lecture, how many people here believe they've seen what I would consider to be a flying saucer? And the lecture being flying saucers are real, they know I'm not going to laugh. And so I said, you know, just raise your hand. We didn't let the CIA in. And I start counting, pointing and counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm looking around the room, you know. The time I get to the other side, the hands go up rapidly. At the beginning, they're hesitant. They know I'm not going to laugh, but how about everybody else here, you know?
Yeah.
And so typically it's 10% of the audience. That's more people than have had polio, incidentally.
But yeah.
I don't know that that's the standard, but but then I ask, how many of you reported what you saw? 90% of the hands go down.
Oh.
And the biggest reason given me at my table, when they want to talk and tell me about their sighting, because I got to tell somebody, you know. The biggest reason given when I say, well, how come you didn't report it? They think I was some kind of a nut. So I'm trying to lift the laughter curtain, let people know that it's okay. And this applies, of course, to the media.
Uh-huh.
If they think that the boss editor is going to laugh at them if they treat the subject seriously, they won't treat it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of the major difficulties here, in other words, is to get past that laughter curtain. Now, I'm lucky. They trust me, and they will talk to me. And incidentally, my third question, after 90% of the hands have gone down, is how many of you were in the military at the time? I still got some hands. I'll say you want to tell us about it. Whoops, now I've trapped them. I got one guy in front of 1,350 people at East Texas State University, says, I can't, they told me not to say anything, which was a wonderful line.
Yeah, nice
and
thing
I had,
say.
Yeah, I get some very interesting stories that way that I would never get if I hadn't sort of done this little game playing with them to isolate them and get them to talk. So one of the things I'm also out to do is to get people to tell about their, I'll call it military UFO adventures. because there are loads of them. There's a new book out, Shoot Them Down, by Frank Fascino, Jr. I wrote the foreword and the epilogue for it, about the events of 1952, which included the Flatwoods Monster on September 12th, West Virginia, that is.
Yeah.
But also, we were able to show that orders were given to military people, shoot pilots, shoot them down if they don't land when instructed to do so.
Oh, wow.
You can think of all the cartoons that can go with that, and there's a lot of them. But the point is that a general also made the public statement. This wasn't in the New York Times or the Washington Post, but we did find it in legitimate newspapers. One Air Force general said, we scrambled more than 300 times.
Wow.
Now, something Frank did that nobody else has done, he went through the New York Times for like 1950 to 1955 and determined that more than 200 military planes crashed, almost all of them in the United States, and that in 60-some cases, the pilots didn't bail out. And I'll warn you, if you talk to any military Air Force types from that era, they'd say, you're crazy. What do you mean they didn't bail out? Of course they bailed out if there was a problem. Well, they didn't. And three of the pilots, believe it or not, had over 100 missions in Korea where there were MiGs trying to shoot them down, you know? They come back to the United States. They survived over 100 missions, and there were no MiGs flying over the United States at that time, I'm reliably told. And they crash. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, these are experienced pilots.
Pilots in combat conditions, they survive. You come back to a clear sky, and you crash.
Yeah.
And you don't follow protocol and eject.
Yeah. And I should tell you this, that I have heard on seven different occasions about more pilots going up than to chase UFOs than came back down. So that's kind of scary. But people say, well, wait a minute, Stan, you're telling us that the public wasn't told about this. And I say, yeah, I'm telling you that. And they say, nah, come on. Families surely were told what happened to their sons, brothers, fathers, whatever. I said, well, let me give you a good example of governments not telling families. There was a book published in 2001 by a William Burroughs, B-U-R-R-O-W-S, journalist, history professor, other things. It's called By Any Means Necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of a number of American reconnaissance planes that were, what's the polite term? They were tickling the radar over North Korea, China, and Russia back in the late 40s, early 50s, mostly before we got satellite coverage. And these planes were shot down. 166 crew members died. Many of them bail out and were apparently captured and tortured and all kinds of other things. You know what? The Russians didn't say anything, or the Chinese, or the North Koreans, and neither did the American government until a big conference was called of the families in 2001, mind you, and medals were given out, and the people found out what had happened to their family members. So for people who think governments won't, couldn't, didn't keep secrets, they're full of baloney because they did. And so, you know, we've got one of the chapters in the book, Flying Saucers and Science, is the Cosmic Watergate, with a lot of examples of governments not telling the public about big, expensive programs. I don't mean four professors and six grad students.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like the Corona spy satellite program. First successful one got more data about the Soviet Union military installations than all the U-2 flights that had preceded it.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1960. There were a bunch more successful flights. First public discussion about Corona was 1995.
35.
And believe me, that involved thousands of people, because you got to design, you know, the launch system, and you got to design the business end of the satellite, and then the systems for receiving the data and transferring it, and all kinds of things. A lot of people involved. Not one word in public. That's one of a number of programs that I talk about in the book. But I say this, what I'm trying to say here is, it's time for us to get real. And I'd certainly like to hear from people who are listening that may know about a pilot who went up and didn't come back.
Mm.
That would be nice. I'm sure I'm looking for Roswell witnesses, and I'm looking for people who have exciting stories to tell. And I look for military stuff, because who else has got fancy radar systems monitoring the sky?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Who else is in a position to get information from a pilot chasing a UFO who sees it on his radar and talks to the ground, and they see it on their radar? You and I don't hear about those.
No.
Mm-mm.
So there's a lot going on out there, and I should stress, of course, that I worked under security for 14 years. So I know something about security. I don't need to make up any stories. The real world is strange enough.
Uh-huh.
Now, also, I've been to 20 archives, and I am so sick and tired of the armchair theorists. My book, Top Secret Magic, M-A-J-I-C, deals with the Majestic 12 papers. And, you see all kinds of people saying, everybody knows they're a fraud, except Friedman. He won't admit it. Well, I go through details. I don't make up explanations. I go to the archives, I check the documents, and I have refuted all the anti-arguments. Not that you know it from those arguments still being made, but it's really crazy how people are quite willing to speak out about stuff about which they know nothing.
Mm.
And at least one of them paid me for proving him wrong. That was the late Philip Klass. He was a noisy negativist, to be polite. Still felt it was his job as an avionics editor for Aviation Week and Space Technology to say all UFO sightings have prosaic explanations, and all those Majestic 12 documents are fraudulent. And he challenged me on the typeface on one of them that was found in the National Archives, mind you, that it was the large Pica type. But it should have been the small elite type, and I've got 9 documents from the National Security Council to prove it. And he offered me $100 each for every genuine document I could find. It had to be signed and all kinds of other things. Done in the same size and style type, but he set a limit of 10, unfortunately. Well, you know what's coming. He never had been to the Eisenhower Library. I've spent weeks there, and after sending him 14 and an invoice for $1,000, he sent me the $1,000.
Wow. Oh.
Well, he didn't tell anybody about sending me the $1,000. He told everybody about challenging me. He got very mad at me when I included it, the copy of the check and a report that I did in 1990. I'm including it in the book, too. He threatened to sue me.
Really?
I said, Phil, you sent me the check. I Xeroxed it. I went to the bank. They cashed it. It was good. I can do whatever I darn please with this here.
Yeah. Well, he sounds, though, since he didn't sue you, did he?
He threatened to.
He threatened to, yeah.
Finding out that I had enclosed this check, he threatened to sue me, and I that's when I told him, forget it.
just by keeping his word, though, and actually sending the check, that's an honorable thing, I think. And another honorable thing would be to go to break.
Yeah, let's take
so
a
I think
break
we need
here.
To go to break. And then I want to ask you just a few questions about changing public perception real quick, and then we can get into some really good UFO stuff. You guys, the website is www.stantonfriedman.com, and of course the book that's coming out in May, right, is Flying Saucers and Science, and it's going to really stir some things up. So,
it'll make a lot of people angry.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So think about that during the break. Load up stantonfriedman.com to learn more about who we're talking to, and listen to some good independent music during this break.
Would you like to listen to Ghostly Talk Live on your cell phone? Perhaps you have a comment for us or our guests. All you have to do is dial 605-475-8590. When asked for the conference code, dial 555-1081, followed by the pound sign.
Hi there. When I need to quench my desire for the paranormal, only one thing can hit the spot. I tune into Night Watch with Todd Sheets. Accept no substitutes. When you need the real thing, tune in to Night Watch, the only show that shudders and shakes and bumps in the night. And don't forget, Night Watch is also available on iTunes for your portable paranormal pleasure. Night Watch, paranormal radio for everyone. Why settle for less? Demand the best. Night Watch.
Experience the charm and mystery of the Deep South through ghost stories by attending the highly respected Roswell Ghost Tour. Your experienced guide will lead you on this two-hour outdoor walking tour through the historic district of Roswell. One of the highlights of the tour is a visit to Founders Cemetery, the burial site of Roswell King, where bodies are buried beneath modern streets and houses. Grand Greek Revival mansions and humble millworkers' apartments are some of the haunted sites you'll see on this mile of easy walking. Check RoswellGhostTour.com for the current schedule. Tours run most Friday and Saturday nights year-round, and private tours may be arranged. Reservations are required. Call 770-649-9922. That's 770-649-9922 for more information. Happy haunting from Roswell Ghost Tours.
This is Ghostly Talk.
Happy Easter.
Why, thank you, Scott L.
Yeah.
Oh, you meant to everybody.
Oh. No, just us.
Just me.
Just me and you.
Just us, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope there's some people listening.
We don't promise that. We just promise an interview.
I think our moms are listening, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. What struck me, Stanton, is that it's kind of similar in the ghost community, because, you know, we're called Ghostly Talk, and we talk about all things paranormal, including UFOs, but it's kind of similar in that, you know, reporting a ghost is, it's more like, you know, first you need to know who to talk to, because you're not going to walk up to anyone on, you know, and say, you know, I saw a ghost. You want to know that you'll be at least taken slightly seriously. So it's a similar kind of mindset, I think. Now, with the ghost thing, you know, the TV and the media, and then, of course, we've got October, fortunately, where pretty much the entire satellite lineup is ghost this, haunted that, you know. So we're a little more fortunate in that it's getting out there, and people are starting to talk about it more. But I'm wondering, you know, like, can you be fired for saying, like, I imagine in some cases, if you're a pilot or if you're something like that, that I saw a UFO. But if you're out, you know, plowing your field all day and you see a UFO, or if you're laying a new highway, if you're out in the regular workforce, the non-military regular workforce, non-air, you know,
aerospace
kind of thing. And so you're out in the bulk of the workforce, and you just happen to be out and about, and you have an encounter. What would be the fears? Like, can you be fired? Do people really persecute you because you say that you saw this? Or do people say, hey, you know what, that's an interesting story. What did it look like? How is it usually perceived? Why are people holding back?
Well, they're holding back mainly because of the fear of how other people will respond. And you're certainly right. There is a parallel here with stories about ghosts and other aspects of the paranormal. And I will tell you this, the same four basic rules for debunkers are used, regardless of the subject they're attempting to debunk. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. If you can't attack the data, attack the people. It's easier. And do your research by proclamation, because investigation is too much trouble and nobody will know the difference anyway.
I've heard all of them. All of those have been used against me, yeah.
The one example recently, the reporter for the Stephenville, Texas paper lost her job for treating the subject seriously, and that's pretty sad. Wow. Airline pilots certainly do worry about this because many of them have been told to keep their mouth shut. And yes. It's fortunate there's an organization called NARCAP, National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena. What a long moniker. Anyway, they've collected thousands of pilot sightings because they don't reveal names and, you know, details and stuff like that. And so it's the perception that matters. In other words, will your friends laugh at you? Will they think less of you? I've had, when I ask my questions about who's had a sighting afterward, I've had, at a dinner talk where we all have dinner and then I give a talk, then later we're talking, somebody said to their spouse, well, how come you raised your hand when he said, when he asked about sightings? And he said, well, I had one. And, well, you didn't tell me about it. No, I thought you'd laugh at me. I mean, that's a spouse to spouse, mind you.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is that appears to be a major concern of people, that they be thought reasonably well of by other people. And the government has taken advantage of this in encouraging a negative attitude. I mean, look at the response to Roswell. At two government books, I'll call them. One's about 1,000 pages, the other one only 250.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Roswell Report, Truth versus Fiction in the New Mexico Desert. Well, it was the Air Force that supplied the fiction, unfortunately. And not surprisingly, Colonel Weaver, who was wrote the first big report, his specialty, disinformation.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And he, you know, he even lied about me, and I resent that, you know. So if you can they tried to tabloidize the story, and they were successful in making it sound that way because it gets picked up by other people. Noisy negativists, as I call them, nasty noisy negativists, nasty naysayers, call them what you want.
Mm.
When I discuss the nuclear issue, it's nasty noisy nuclear negativists. But the point of this is that somebody has to stand up and say, you guys are full of bologna. You're running a delicatessen here. You're shoving out slicing the bologna every what and which way. And somebody's got to say that it's nonsense. And the thing is, I don't have a boss to worry about except me.
Mm-hmm.
I've had professors say, well, I'll look at that sample, but you better not tell anybody that I did. You know, and I'm trying to give them courage enough to stand up and be counted. And you know, the last, since January 1st, 2007, things have gotten much better, really, because, it's a funny reason, because newspapers have become aware that people are interested in flying saucers, not just nuts, but people, and they've been losing circulation to the Internet, not surprising. And so when the Chicago Tribune, a conservative, mid-America, major newspaper, carried a front-page story above the fold on January 1st, 2007, about the sighting over O'Hare Airport by a number of United Airline employees, and they treated it straight, that story, as they commented a little bit later, led the list. It got more hits on their website than any other story they'd ever published about anything. And it led the list for 4 days in a row, which never happens. And the reporter, who, interestingly enough, was the transportation reporter, which is kind of stretching it a little bit, but anyway.
Wow.
He got calls from all over the world for interviews. And it shocked him, it shocked the newspaper, and when the rest of the media heard about it, they gave fairer coverage to several other stories in 2007. One was Fife Symington, the governor of Arizona, March 13th, 1997, when the big Phoenix lights sighting took place,
yeah.
who suddenly admitted that he had seen it and he had been a pilot and it sure wasn't from this world and so forth and so on. That story got a lot of play. You wouldn't expect that. Who cares in New Jersey about some former Arizona governor, you know? It got a lot of play. It was on Larry King and so forth. The story about the French government putting on their website a bunch of French reports that hadn't generally been available. Their website went down in 2 hours.
Oh, I believe that, yes.
Yeah,
and I remember that,
The Minister of Defense, and Ministry of Defense in England also got a huge number of hits on their website when they announced they were slowly going to be posting stuff on their website. And so that led, I don't know if you remember, in November of this past year, there was a press conference at the Washington National Press Club, the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., at which there was testimony from military people from seven different countries, pilots mostly. And they were treated much more seriously than you might otherwise have expected. They've been on Larry King, and there's a new movie going to come out and deal with it. So we're getting there. It's slow. But, I mean, of course, the nasty, noisy negativists will be with us forever. But I'm hopeful, in other words. My book, Captured, there's another book that came out last year. It's the Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. And my co-author, who did most of the work, it was Kathleen Martin, who was Betty's niece and had all her tapes and so forth. And, gee, we must have done, I don't know, 50 interviews, radio interviews, because of the book. And it's still doing well.
Uh-huh.
It's on Amazon, you know, and it's on my website, too, of course. And if you get it from me, at least you get both signatures.
That's true, yeah.
Which you won't from Amazon. But it has been well received. And, again, it's part of this loosening up. So I'm really optimistic. I've been at this a long time, and I'm not saying the government's going to release anything, because what it's going to take, I believe, is some adventurous, sharp, young newsman, and to get his sponsoring organization, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, to spend as much effort blowing the lid off the cosmic Watergate as the Post put in on the political Watergate, and as the New York Times did about what was the name of it? Well, Mili and, Daniel Ellsberg, that story. And that might do it, because I think there's an awful lot of guys who'd be willing to talk now. They're so fed up with the government. And as a retired general told me when he was 87, he said, "Stan, I like what you're doing. If I remember anything more or tell you about it, what can they do to me now?" Which is a great line when you're 87. My address and my phone number are on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. And I better mention, because I had a complaint from somebody, my website, Stanton is S-T-A-N-T-O-N. Friedman, you have to spell it right to get there. F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N.
Uh-huh.
And I had a guy send me an email and say, "Well, I can't find your website." Well, he spelt it F-R-E-I. Don't do that, folks.
Right, it's and I before E, except after C, or when sounded like A is a neighbor or way. So it's F.
Oh, we learned the same rule.
There we go. So it's Stanton Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. Yes,
.com. Yeah, that's easy to find. And the thing is that there's a lot of factual data around that people aren't aware of. That's the purpose of the new book. One chapter deals with the large-scale scientific studies that I talk about in my lecture. And I find, because I ask after I talk about each one, how many people here read this? Typically 2%, if I'm lucky. So one chapter deals with those studies. Another deals with the second big objection. The first is there isn't any evidence. And you'll hear that from the SETI cultists. You know what SETI stands for.
Oh, yes, I had read that on your website. What was it again?
Silly effort to investigate.
Oh.
Not search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I have a whole chapter about that. I have a whole chapter about science fiction writers, because Isaac Asimov, Ben Bova, and the late now Arthur Clarke, Asimov is unfortunately no longer with us either, They have all said, quite frankly, for bright people, stupid things about flying saucers.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't done their homework. And I mention it because a lot of people think that, oh, science fiction writers must be believers in flying saucers. Like heck they are. They're quite not. They worked long and hard to make science fiction respectable, space travel, you know, and all that stuff. I don't want to be tarred with the kook brush that goes with flying saucers, folks, you know. And so there's a lot of stuff that needs to be covered, and that's what I'm trying to do in the new book because, you know, I'm getting old, and I need, this is my magnum opus, but, you know, I'm thinking about another book. You'll get a kick out of this one. It's impossible, isn't it? About all the false claims that have been made, the guy who showed that it would be impossible to fly except with a balloon 3 months or 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight, a guy who showed it would be impossible to put anything into orbit around the Earth, an astronomer who showed that the required initial launch weight of a rocket to get a man to the moon and back would be a million tons. He was only off by a factor of 300,000. I mean, astronomically in error, to say
what,
the least.
300,000 between friends.
Yeah.
You know? Sure.
And so I'm tempted to write a book like that because you want to look around now and see what other claims are being made about impossibility that are as full of baloney as the claims that have been made in the past by smart people talking about things about which they knew nothing. That's usually the problem, you know. It's amazing. We take for granted now a whole bunch of things that, when they were first enunciated, continental drift, for example. The guy, anybody who looks at a globe sees that, gee, you know, South America and Africa seem to fit together, kind of, you know.
Right. It's just,
if you were to push them together and so forth. Anyway.
It really looks like a puzzle. It does. Like, it would snap right in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that guy put up with all kinds of harassment for suggesting such a stupid thing.
You know, I had my own impossible moment where I thought something was impossible, yet it ended up coming to pass. I was reading a book by Edgar Cayce, or not by Edgar Cayce, but by Jess Stern about Edgar Cayce. And he was he would go into a trance and then make all these predictions and things. And one of the things he said was that communism in Russia will fall, in the USSR would fall. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh, that is absolutely impossible. They're the number, well, of course, to us, they were the number two superpower. And of course, I'm sure to them, we were the number two superpower, you know, because of the propaganda machines, but to us they were the number two superpower. It was a well-established country, or you know, series of countries. It was just going to be it was going to be there forever, as far as I was concerned. They're our enemy, you know, and it was drilled into my head, and I was in college, and sure enough, guess what? The fall of communism in Russia. I had an impossible moment where I was proven wrong. So it definitely can happen. You just make all these assumptions, and there you go. We only have like 4 minutes left, Stanton, and I just want to let people know how busy you are. Because if they can't tell already, I want to let them know. You're going to Aztec, New Mexico.
Next week,
and talking about the new book, the upcoming book, Flying Saucers and Science. You're going to be
on a number of other speakers,
of course, and that's which is going to be amazing. So March 28th through 30th in Aztec, New Mexico. I'm sure that's on your website. You're going to be on the Queen Mary on April 27th. Interesting thing about the Queen Mary, Stanton, it's haunted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so watch out. See if you have any extra people listening to your listening to you talk. you and Kathy talking about Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill story. UFO Experience. Because just see if you can see through any of your listeners. That's all I'm saying.
All right. In June, look. See where I'm going to be in June?
In Kansas City, right?
Yeah, and the people involved in that are mysterious universe kind of people, and there's some ghostly people going to be speaking there, too.
That's going to be interesting. And then, of course, the 4th of July weekend, I'm going to be stalking you all over Roswell, New Mexico.
All right.
So I'm wearing that pink shirt. you know, that says Stanton Friedman is real, and so watch out for me and get security, you know, to surround you. So you are super busy, and I think that that's fantastic, because you certainly haven't slowed down since we talked last.
Yeah,
and
that was
and
a
I
few years ago.
That.
Well, you know, I'm healthy. I'm lucky that way. I've never spent overnight in a hospital. Well, I guess I did when I was born, but that doesn't remember.
Right.
But also, my parents both lived to be 89, so I got 15-plus years to go and good health. You know, I should be able to do it. But when you like what you're doing and you're your own boss and you live right, you know, I live in beautiful Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, which this year is at 11 feet of snow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's really easy on the nerves there.
Yeah.
There's 3 feet of it still in my front yard, you understand?
Wow.
And this is springtime, it says here. It was down to 12 degrees today. But,
toasty.
You know, how can you not be happy living in a town that last year declared August 27th? Stanton Friedman Day.
We got to put that on our calendar.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a holiday.
That was the mayor and the city council. Now, I didn't even get a free cup of coffee out of that.
But still, yeah, they honor you, and I think that that's fantastic. And
what surprised me is that I did 16 interviews as a result of that proclamation all over the place, and everybody was friendly, which was really a story.
Which is fantastic. We have to close the show, Stanton. I do want to
thank you so much,
Stanton. I want to give out the website.
My pleasure.
Stay on the line, though.
Yeah, don't leave us
just
yet.
A moment. I do want to give out the website is www.stantonfriedman.com. And for those who don't know that rule, I before E except after C or sounded like A as a neighbor in way, it's stantonfriedman.com. And so thank you so much. And before Stanton, we got to talk to Dan Gordon.
Oh, yeah. Baseball.
Of hauntedbaseball.com. Thank you so much, Dan. And thank you, everybody. Everybody go to www.ghost2ghost.org and link up to the mygtogspace.com.
Yeah, Richard Klontz's new project.
And see what Richard Klontz has going on. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Ghostly Talk. Independent music rocks. I have been Doug.
I've been Scott L.
I'm still Bonnie.
And we'll be back next week with more madness.
Ghostly Talk!
You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.